Welcome back to Design Huddle, a podcast for creative professionals looking to level up. This podcast is hosted by myself, Ryan Warnder, a UX designer based in New York City, and my co-host, Brendan Gross, a digital strategist for Fortune 500s. This podcast is the intersection of design, business, people, and just possibly the next big idea. We interview designers, thought leaders, co-founders, influencers, and sometimes just our friends from Instagram. If you like design, the internet, or storytelling, this just might be your new favorite podcast. We have a ton of incredible episodes and content coming out soon, so please subscribe. And for now, let's dive into today's episode of Design Huddle.
All right, guys. So today we have a very special guest on this episode of Design Huddle. We're super excited to have her on and drop some gems with us today and reverse engineer how she's been able to achieve the success that she has been having in the design industry. Guys, without further ado, our guest has over 16 years of experience in the design industry. She has been recognized as being one of the top 8 women in tech and has had the pleasure of working with Fortune 200s to help solve their business challenges through design. And most importantly, because, you know, how I like to do on IG, she's also been voted one of the top UX Instagrammers to follow in 2019. So please help me in welcoming senior product designer Mariam Isaac to Design Huddle. How are you doing, Mariam?
Hi, Brandon. So glad to be here. Thanks so much. Really exciting.
I'm super excited, especially, you know, I really dig what you're doing, not only on Instagram, but LinkedIn. I feel like you have, you're really the type of knowledge that you're bringing to platforms that designers typically don't. That's really interesting to me. But we're not here to talk about that because I'm going to end up fangirling. But what we want to get into, guys, today is, a couple things. So Mariam, to start out, on the podcast, we've had a lot of people like yourself who've been in the game for such a long time. And, I would really love to talk about the major turning points that you have had in your career. You can name between 1 and 2 or, three that have really helped you grow into the designer today. Like, what do you have 2 to 3 turning points in your career where you grasp some sort of lesson or something that's enabled you to be the designer you are today?
Yeah, for sure. By the way, I just want to say I'm really glad to be here, Brandon. You know, I'm a big fan of yours and ashamed that Ryan couldn't make it today because I'm really a big fan of you and Ryan from Instagram, and it's so good to like get on the phone or on the video.
Definitely.
Because it's been really fun on Instagram. This is really cool. So
yeah, we're here doing it.
Okay, so for me, I started off as a graphic designer, as most of us probably did coming into UX, and I started working for a company that was creating these electronic vaping devices, electronic cigarettes at the time, which we felt were really helping to stop smoking. And we really felt we were trying to save the world. And I was hired because they really needed to increase sales on their e-commerce website.
Yeah.
I was freelancing as a graphic designer, and at the time I was getting a lot of these web clients wanted me to make these websites because websites were the new upcoming thing and it was kind of like a new business card. Yeah. So I was there trying to put together websites, reverse engineering, downloading like complete websites from the internet and saying, okay, this is how that was built and that was how that was built. You know, it was a very like the Wild West. Anyone was trying to figure it out and trying to just put up these websites. And at the time, that was most work for me was coming in through web design. So I became known within the community as the web designer to go to. So this company was like a local company, a startup here in Israel, and they were looking for someone to come in and to help with their website sales and to help with conversion. And I had a bit of experience in that.
Yeah.
So when I went in, they still had like a desktop website, and at the time mobile was really becoming a thing. And I was like, guys, we've got to go mobile. And they were like, no, all our traffic comes in from desktop, we don't need to go mobile. I'm like, guys, no, this is like up and coming, like you've got to go mobile.
We have to get there.
they weren't listening talking to me whatsoever. So I had to build a whole business case around responsive design. I spent ages learning like Ethan Marcotte's books and Brad Frost and all these people and putting together a business case.
Yeah.
And predicting that mobile was going to be the future, which now, looking back on it, we're like, what? By the time I had to prove it, this will go this way. So I did this business case, and they were like, okay, fine, you know what, Miriam, you go ahead and make the website responsive. And they promoted me to a manager. They were like, didn't know what to call me. And I was like, well, you know, why don't you call me like a UX manager?
You're like, this is the title I would like.
They're like, what's that? I'm like, don't worry about it. And like, because I knew. because I knew where we were going in the industry. And I was like, they were like, well, you can't be the graphic design manager because we already have one of those. So I was like, okay, you know what? I'll just do this UX thing. And no one was offended because they were like, okay, you can do that. And I was like, great.
Awesome.
And I got a team of designers and developers that I kind of like gathered from around the company. I actually took people from like customer service and I trained them on Treehouse. And I trained whoever wanted to listen to me.
Wow.
That whoever wanted to become a designer, I started training whatever I knew. I shared with them because that was the mantra of the internet at the time: you share what you know.
Yeah.
So I was applying that to my day-to-day work life. So the rest of the business was kind of going on, doing the same thing, and I was sat in a corner with my team doing our thing. And eventually we were acquired by a Fortune 200 company.
Yeah.
And we
are you at liberty to say, are you? You can say no. Secrets, guys, secrets. Just no. Fortune 200s, they don't play. All right, we can continue. Play.
So they really like took a liking to myself because I was like British and
that's always a plus.
And they're like, oh, you're very nice. We like you. Because they were from America and we were like full of like a lot of Israelis. And I also knew how to do client relations because I had that background with working with clients. And we had to turn from being a product-centric company to a client-centric company. And no one kind of knew how to do that.
Yeah.
So I kind of took the lead there as well. So in the end, like 2 years down the line, people turn around and be like, oh, look at Miriam. She's got this massive team and she's that client facing, what happened here? And it was kind of like, because they had let me be building the website and I had also helped. I was documenting everything. I was documenting every A/B test and every change that we made because I wanted to prove business value, because I wanted to get more budget so I can carry on doing what I was doing and helping people improve their lives through learning front-end development or UX design, because I saw that this is the future and these people, we can't keep them in customer service, we can really better their lives here. And that's really what, you know, I'm all about. And it's why I share like a lot online in general, because I really believe people that don't have, you know, we're not all privileged to be open to the same opportunities that, you know, that most people in the Western society may have, or they might have like, they might have got married young or whatever happens in people's lives. And I really believe that the internet provides this amazing opportunity to get into like this type of field where if you're driven and you're talented, you can earn 10x from what you're earning now. And if you, and I think it's just amazing. And I saw that with my own self, like my salary tripled within, you know, like the space of maybe like 3 years.
Yeah.
And I think that was incredible. I never thought I would be able to earn this much as a graphic designer. Never in my whole life. And I think it's amazing.
Yeah, let's hop into a couple things there, because I really like this topic. I really like where it went, because a lot of the questions that we get, and we've not really been able to hop into it. There is a question that comes up a lot on people who listen to this, and they're like, well, you guys talk a lot about the freelance stuff, but how does it actually work internally at a company if you're trying to build your own career internally? And I love that you talked about, you know, you had to build an entire business case for what exactly you're trying to push forward, being able to build an internal team, and really how you went about managing that. Just, I would love to get some of your, what you were thinking when, like, how did you learn to, you know, present a business case? You know, that whole journey as you were building or really positioning yourself to build out your entire team. Like, what were your thoughts during that time? Like, as you're building the business case, like, did you, like, how do you know exactly? Because really what I'm trying to get here is I'm trying to get you to say to everybody who's listening, like, what your steps were to basically get the green light to build your own team. There we go.
So, yeah, no, I totally get that. So, first of all, you've got to spend a year just listening to what your managers, what they always repeat, what they always say, what is important to them. Listen to, you know, take stock. You know, if you want to be like a good user experience designer, you need to see the data around you and you need to learn people and you need to, you know, take that analysis and just listen. The same principles are just going to apply it to like being in a company. So just, you know, see what your managers are passionate about, see what the people around you are passionate about, see how people higher than you are getting their projects through as well. Yeah. And they take the honor and learn from that. So I didn't even present a business case until I was at least a year into the company, because I knew I was able to align that with what they need. And one of my questions in my own client discovery is asking them these types of questions, which is, you know, what's, you know, if you had one goal on this project, what would it be and why? And I would, and I'd ask, Karen, asking these questions, see which words they repeated the most, circle those words, and those are the words that I would present back to the client. So, and that would make my idea bit easy to sell, because it's called, it's actually a psychological principle called mirroring.
Gotcha.
So, and I really highly recommend it, because then they feel like, oh, she listened to me, she heard me, and this is the right designer for me. So in the company, I saw that, okay, revenue, of course, is very important.
Correct.
That was number one. And number two, I was always benchmarking my career against what I saw in the landscape and industry. So I would look on job descriptions online and see like, okay, people are looking for designers with mobile experience. That was at the time, or like coding experience. And I was like, okay, well, I'm not getting mobile experience because we're still on desktop. What can I do about that in this company? I'm going to leave in like 3 years time and not have the right experience to carry on. So I put that together with, and there was a lot of talks at the time about how becoming responsive and how becoming mobile friendly was actually increasing revenue on desktop as well. So I was gathering all these different decks that I saw online from other companies, from agencies that, you know, thankfully people in this industry are amazing and they publish everything and anything. It's such a brilliant industry, and I was able to, you know, gather from different data points and then gather our own business cases and go on Google Analytics and go on Hotjar and go on the different places and build and show like, okay, look, people aren't clicking here, but if we did X, Y, and Z, we can get them to click over there, which could increase conversion. So it's about mirroring each part. You know, you've got the business part and you've got the data part and the user part, and bringing this all together. I'll speak to also customer service and ask them, what did the customers complain about on the phone? You know, and I'd also collect the online feedback that came in through a portal as well, and look for patterns and bring that into the deck as well. And I saw, for me, what was amazing was that I saw that the more data I brought into the meeting, the better my ideas got passed, because it no longer became the subjective designer or the emotional designer who wanted the blue color. Yeah. I was bringing data to the table, and it was amazing. I never had that in my entire career, and I learned this from someone called Sarah Parmita, who presented at one of the conference is called the Future of Web Design. It was a conference that used to be a few years ago. And she showed on her deck how to do this. Yeah. So I learned from her how to bring the different data points from different areas of the business and to bring it back and to make it design driven.
Wow. We definitely are going to have to put some links in regards to whoever that presenter was in the description, because I definitely want to take a look at that. But to basically bring it back and kind of bullet point that, to me, what it sounds like is for the business case, being in the business and actually listening and analyzing what your manager's pain points are, and basically what you were saying is taking note of that. And really what you were doing is circling the words or phrases or whatnot, the pain points that came up the most, and basically using, looking forward into the future, researching to see how exactly you can position both your company and yourself for future possibilities. And then finally, the data piece, not only the analysis of how your current platform is working, but also the feedback from the testing of what you guys want to put forth or have put forth. So for those of you guys listening, what I got out of it was definitely, it was definitely like the list, for business case, making sure you actually listen to what's going on in the business, making sure you're bringing research to the table, and also the data side of things. I really like that kind of trifecta and, that entire thing you just brought us through. So thank you for that.
Yeah, it's so important to keep your ear on the ground, to be aware. Don't just sit there with your earphones on and think like, no. Oh, I'm gonna make nice designs. Everyone's going to love them. Everyone's going to love me. No, like be in the kitchen, be by the water cooler, have your in-house, like talk to people. Talk. You know what, customers, they love it when you go to them and ask, hey, like what's the worst problems you have? They love it. It's like a venting session for them.
Yeah.
Well, we had customer service going around the office. And they walk past me and they go, oh, that's Miriam. She's a designer and she loves customer experience. And I was like, yeah, come to me. Come tell me all your problems.
That's hilarious. No, it's really crazy how important it is to be not only everything that you mentioned, like learning how to do a business case and actually, because that's not a designer skill. That's well, unless you really want to break it down and be like, well, Brandon UX is listening and that's part of a designer skill. Whatever. All right, guys, I'm trying to make a point here.
I think Chris D would disagree with you as well.
Oh, Lord. All right, let me break it down for you. Okay. Because someone's going to be like, oh, designer. Someone's going to just scale it up to like, the designer is everything.
I need to be a CEO. What?
Okay. Let's break it down to what exactly I'm trying to explain. So in the context that I'm talking about, design to me, or designer, as I'm going to be talking about it for right now, is those who are just talking about pixel pushing. That's it. Like, you just know how to use the platforms or whatever to manipulate pixels. Now, everything else outside of that for this particular what we're going to be talking about is everything that's stacked on top of that. So you have your technical skills, and then what we just talked about is something totally outside of that. You are now venturing out into the client relationships, knowing how to actually listen and actually use your soft skills that you learn as a designer, the technical skills, right, to branch out and be able to make those relationships. And the reason I'm spending a lot of time on this is because this is a huge thing I feel like a lot of people have challenges with, both on the freelance side and on the internal side. They think the better that they design, the more money that will be in their pocket as a as the outcome of being a really good technical designer. But it's these other skill sets that being able to understand what goes into a business case so you can pitch it, being able to have the relationship so that you can pitch the business case. These are really important things that Miriam is bringing up, and I highly recommend when we do drop this description in the link for the lady that she mentioned and who gave that presentation, I highly recommend you guys figure out the or learn the other things outside of just technical design. So that's my rant. Thank you, Miriam, for bringing that. I mean,
it's important because so many designers, like at the beginning of the career, and I have younger designers come to me and say to me, Miriam, I don't understand. Like, I'm doing customer research and I'm doing analytics. I'm doing all the stuff that I learned in UX school, or graphic design school, but my designs aren't getting passed, or I can't do anything, or my manager wants me to make it red when really it should be yellow. And it's really frustrating. And a lot of designers do drop out the field because of this frustration. But they need to understand that to get a seat at the table, they've got to have that ear open to hear what their manager is saying, to hear what people around them are saying to them, and to take that and mirror it back. Otherwise, you will just stay a junior designer, which is fine. Some people, they'll be, executors, as you say. You have that in companies where you have the designers who just, they execute. But if you want to go to the next level, right? You've got to challenge yourself. You've got to ask, how can I make this design important for the business? And that's so much of being a UX designer, is that you have to be comfortable in numbers. You have to, if they want to A/B test, you go for it. You know, you say, okay, A/B test it, please. I want to learn. I want to know what works. I want to know what doesn't work. And if you're a good designer, your design will work, you know? And also nowadays, like Brandon, you post a lot of designs on your Instagram account, and they're all amazing. The level of skill nowadays is the next level. Like, it's the next level. We were able to get away with murder 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Look, go on Dribbble. It's incredible. The level is like the highest ever been in our entire careers. So how are you supposed to beat that? How are you supposed to beat amazing pixel perfect designs?
Mm-hmm.
You have to go into interview and you have to be able to talk numbers. You have to be able to talk users. You have to be able to talk data. You have to be able to talk about your designs in correlation to the business. Because otherwise, you won't be seen as someone that I'm going to bring into the table, I'm going to bring into the conversations. And you have to challenge yourself, be comfortable with it. Listen to Chris Du. Listen to Brandon. Listen to whoever speaks about this. Stephen Gates is another great one. And you know what, Brandon? Maybe I'll send you a template of how to sell a design and stuff like that. I think that'd be helpful for you.
Yeah, that would definitely 100%. Yeah.
So also, I have my process on my website that people can read through, and it's really for those designers who are feeling frustrated.
Yeah.
Right, like I did. I had this frustration. I understand. I empathize. You know.
They're super. Yeah.
You've got to gotta get comfortable. It's okay, you'll get there, you'll learn. Like, you learn design, like you learn. I used to cry in Photoshop, I used to cry in HTML. You're gonna cry in data. It's gonna be okay. It's gonna be fine.
The process is cry and learn. There we go, guys. That's it. Design huddle out. Goodbye. No, it is all very important, and it does take time. I mean, really, that's what it is. I don't like to subscribe to the it's hard movement. It's not even movement, but things take time. But off that topic, because I think we can talk about that for days. Yeah. I want to get into the whole episode.
Well, that's number two.
Next episode. I want to talk to you about this because I know, because I'm nosy and I was totally eating popcorn while, and I know the post that you know I'm about to get into, Tony's post, and I was just eating popcorn while I was letting it happen. I was even talking to Ryan about this because it's something that we wanted to talk to you about. And even one of the comments that you left on the post had me super intrigued. I would really... because I'm just not somebody who's done prototypes that high fidelity before, but I loved when you mentioned, for those of you guys for context who are listening, we're discussing an Instagram post that one of our friends, Tony, was talking about paper prototypes. And, Miriam brought a good point that they're very good for collaboration. And I would love to, just talk with you about how you feel prototyping, or not how you feel, but how does paper prototyping or prototyping in general, how do you use that in your design process? Like, run us through how you use prototypes, and where is it paper prototypes all the time, or is it, give us the spiel.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know what's really funny is that I just was on Tony's podcast
today.
No, like 5 days ago.
Oh, okay.
And we had a whole debate around this. It's really, I think it's coming out next week. It's really interesting. And also, I listened to your podcast last week on prototyping as well.
Oh, word,
So I guess it's a hot topic. So funny, because Michael Jada also PM'd me. He was like, I hope I never get into a debate with you, Miriam. I would lose. It was so funny. I'll go through my process. So, okay, for me, there's something I was talking about with Tony actually, which was, which I think is quite important, is that the more complex, for that prototype that we were looking at, which was a prototype where the person had put it on a clear plastic and you were swiping through. For me, that's not a complex user experience. Modal boxes aren't complex enough in my experience to have to, start cutting out and moving about. Something that I did recently was actually a form builder. And I know you've been following that process of mine.
Yeah.
So to explain it, it's not actually, I'm not just designing a form, I'm designing the builder that creates the form, right? So so we're talking about Google Forms, we're talking about Wufoo, we're talking about JotForm, and we're talking about the back end, right? So it's all very complicated. It's a good challenge though. So I found when I started to draw, I start with sketching first because I find that, especially on mobile is much closer to you than it is than the screen. Screen is far away, and I find that when I use paper, I can really feel and touch how it feels, right? And also I find that when I don't do paper prototypes and I go straight into sketch, I don't find the user experience is as robust than when I do paper prototypes. So I'll go through my process. So with the form builder, what I started to do was I drew out all the different components. So say you'll have a form field, or you'll have a date picker, or you'll have a number field, whatever it is. And I drew out all these components, and I drew out the side components, which was the preview side. And on the whiteboard, I drew out this this two-sided window, which looked like it was like I had the building side and the preview side, and I stuck on the little components on the side going down the side from each side. So when I called over the stakeholder and the developers, they could really see and play with how it was going to look and feel. And what I find by doing these kind of what could be called elaborate paper prototypes for something that's complex, like a form builder, or say, for example, like a data dashboard on like a banking app, or say, for example, like a journey bus route, you know, maker. These complex user experiences where you're actually making up some of the UX yourself that's not been created before. What I was doing was specific software for lawyers that needed to have conditional logic. So what you had was a lot of like bits that would show up here and it wouldn't show up there, and it would show up there and show up here. And you can't.
It was very complex. Yeah, we're getting deep to the point where I'm like, I just need somebody to draw some things.
Yeah, but... I know.
And so to hop into, because I already like some of the things that you're saying. So you mentioned that your team actually gets to play with the components you've made. It's like it's a collaboration sort of, it's a different way to, it's a physical way to collaborate with your team versus you are then, instead of where it's more of a team initiative to redesign or to play around with the components versus one designer, one computer, and them just pointing their fingers at the design at the screen, and then you're still controlling, you know, the design on your screen. I felt that doing paper exercises with a team, you know, not getting into any platform, it has been super effective for collaboration versus like, you know, setting up prototypes for testing. What are your thoughts on that?
Okay, so what I find is that they can actually start working on the structure. Mm-hmm. And then I've not even started on the colors yet. What I do is I build it all out in paper. Everyone can come in. We can have this amazing collaboration session where people are getting on the whiteboard, they're drawing things out, and we can really get the user experience in a way that everyone can really feel how it actually is going to feel in the end product before we even touch the proper product life cycle, which saves so much money and so much time down the road. You think like, oh, I'm going to start with XD now, I'm going to start designing right now, I'm going to save time. No. The more research and the more preliminary stuff that you do now in terms of its structure and architecture and the build, and the best way of doing it, I find, is for me, is that I actually do cut out the components. For anything that's really e-commerce website, you can just go straight to XD. Or landing page, you can go straight to XD. I don't, you know, there's no point. You know, I'm talking about complex user interactions. I'm talking about you're the one actually making up this UX from scratch. There's never been a UX like this before. And you've got to figure that out. And you can't figure that on your own. You've got to figure out the developers. You've got to figure out with the business owner. You've got to figure out with marketing. Whoever needs to be in that room will be in that room to help you figure it out together. And by doing it on paper, everyone can get that sense of the layers and the structure. And we can do this. We can't do that. You know, like that's not negotiable, or we can change this. And developers can even say, oh, I can't build that. And you're getting the answer now. at the beginning. You're not getting that after you're 50 screens down the line, which is so important. And everyone also feels like they're on the same page right from the start. And no one's feeling they're being blindsided. Or no one feels like, oh, what happened here? I thought we did this. And even so, whilst you're going on with the colors and the design system, the developer's going on with the structure, right? And you'll meet and the path you'll converge together in the middle, and you'll see down the road, you're going to save so much time. Because I've done it the other way. It's not pretty.
Well, explain to us the other way, because I like both sides to be in this. Like, you explained and I really agree with the collaboration piece. I've done a couple collaboration pieces where all you've done is paper in the collaboration sessions, not just with your developer, PM, etc., and marketing, but like with an actual client. For some reason, when there's actual textiles in the room, it's more collaborative, and the client has a lot more fun in that case. And I think it brings a great sense of collaboration that way. So bringing the other side of the table on, I would love for you to explain, like, what have you felt has not gone, what exactly is it? And then what has not gone, what don't you like about that process?
So the more traditional side will be more of a waterfall experience, or even an agile experience, in terms of that the designer is told, given a brief, and they're told, we want this app, we want this form builder, and they sit and they make it and they create it and they go to XD and they make the whole, they design everything within XD. Also, what I want to mention is that I only use XD for execution. I don't think on the computer. I only think on paper, and I only think that's where all the thinking and all the ideation happens. And then when I go into XD, it's just pure execution. It's just like bang, 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 all the screens are out, everything's done, right? There's no, and then it goes straight to developers. So when you go straight on the computer, I've personally just found that I then, when I hand off to the developers, they're like, well, what happens now? What happens now? And I'm like, oh, I'm not sure. I don't know. I didn't figure that out. But when you're really sitting with it and you're sitting with the prototype and you're pressing the buttons, you're pretending to move things, you can actually see and tell what I'm going to miss or what's not going to be. I usually find the other way around. And also what you're going to have is designers spend hours upon hours upon hours in their XD or in the Photoshop or whatever it is. And they made this gorgeous, beautiful, you know, prototype that's even animated. But the developer's like, well, I can't make this. Or the client's like, I want the color change. And you've got like 50 screens that you have to change the color of. Or 50 screens that you have to change the interaction on. And then the designer feels frustrated. You feel frustrated. And you feel like, well, I've spent all this time and I can't, you know, and you don't like it. What's happened here? And it's because we haven't included the right people in the room at the right time. And we can really mitigate this. We can really, you know, I definitely made this mistake so many times where I just, you know, made something amazing, presented it, and thought everyone would just love it. And it's like, no. And they feel, you know, a little bit cheated, and you feel a little bit frustrated, and it's not good for either party. The best is to take on all that constructive feedback at the beginning, and also to bring in the developer, because you don't want the developer thinking, oh, this designer, they don't know anything, they're so emotional, I don't know. You want them to feel that they have a say at the beginning. You know, I'll tell you something. The other day I was making this data report where we were having this, it was highly customizable report where we had to put in, we wanted to allow the end user to put in different pieces and like have different grids.
Yeah.
We were talking over Slack, me and the developer, and I said to him, you know what, come over here. And we drew out very quickly the different components, and then we played how it could actually would work. Oh, so this would pop up first, and then this, then we would have the grid, and then we could pop in the pie chart, and then we could pop in the different components for the pie chart. And it was the only, we couldn't figure it out on the screen. Neither of us, the developer and the designer, we couldn't figure it out. We had to sit down and cut everything out and play with it as it was, pretending it was a real life, you know, digital design
yeah.
product in the end. It's amazing how paper does that. it's just, I don't know, it's fantastic. And he didn't even need anything from me. He was able, he was like, oh, right, I see, I can go. He didn't need more XD things. He didn't need more Envision stuff. He was like, oh, I see it. I get it. So I'm going. Right. That was it. Done.
Yeah. It's definitely a, like, any way, you've mentioned already so many good things. Like, I feel like for everybody who's listening, the main thing that you can get out of that is being able to carry whatever medium it is, being a quick way to get feedback from the right people. You also mentioned a waterfall process. Like now in today's market, you have to be able to have for at least a good end product and making sure that everybody else is in the room or right people are in the room. Like you mentioned, you have to be agile. You have to get the right people involved early and also have a quick way, regardless of how, because it's going to change throughout history, but a quick way of getting feedback or getting things in front of your team to get feedback from the right people. Like those two things are highly important for any good outcome when it comes to design, making sure you have the outcomes from the right the right people in the room early and have a way to communicate early on with those people the direction you're trying to go.
And I would also say, if you're not comfortable, say, drawing, even if you make the components in XD or on a wireframing platform, yeah, and then printing them out and cutting them out, that also works.
Yeah, but I really do love something about paper. It's not a closed box where you can do that sort of thinking. It's very hard to, and it seems very rigid even for myself. Again, this is personal opinion. I'm not sure about, well, you said you know some thinking you can't really do in the softwares, but something about paper just allows everybody to collaborate a lot more easily. And yeah, it's a great place to start. So Mariam, we are coming almost to an end here, but before we do that, because we've got two things happening, I would really love to, there's a couple other questions that we did have, but I really liked the way that we segue into this in this podcast or this episode. So I would love to know, like, with the obstacles you have faced in your design journey in this industry, what was one of the largest obstacles you had to face? How did you overcome it?
I'll be honest. I was actually fired a few years ago. I'm very outspoken. So that's really, when I was working in this company, this Fortune 200 company, I was, as I said, people turned around and were like, oh, Moom's got a big team and Moom's doing all these great projects and projects. And I got a lot of, unfortunately, got very toxic in that place. Instead of being like, let's celebrate this, it was like, oh, like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
And also because it was a very touchy ground in terms of the acquisition, and it makes people feel very insecure. So the environment became very toxic. And I also, you know, when you're in a toxic environment, you kind of, the whole corporate feel kind of like rubs off on you as well. And I felt, I didn't like myself either at the time. I was like, this is what I want, this corporate climbing, this, you know, backstabbing culture. And we kind of got to a place where, you know, I kind of asked to be let go because I wanted the compensation package and I wanted to leave. And it was very hard also on my team, because I said I bought them from scratch. I'd taken these people out from like customer service, from different departments. And really, you know, I'd also taken interns, people that knew nothing, and put them straight into the company. So it was a very emotional kind of parting. But I learned to really take a step back, see what I wanted to be and what I wanted from my own life and what kind of designer I wanted to be. And also at that time, I started actually going onto Instagram.
Yeah.
And I started posting and I started getting to know, you know, people in the industry and people getting to know me. And I started posting on LinkedIn at that time. And my online presence started, you know, being seen, because I was always this, because I've seen how I was able to help these people in this company. And I figured, why not share this with the world, you know, try and teach other people this amazing, you know, this amazing new career called user experience.
Right.
And then over the course of the next, it's very funny, then 2 years later, I got a call from my director, who'd become actually CEO of the company, and he asked me to come back. He actually called me a year later, but I didn't feel ready to go back. And I was like, no, no, no. Then a year later, we spoke again. And it was like, I was like, okay, fine. It was a good deal. And I felt it was maybe time to come back. But unfortunately, the company dissolved 6 months later. It was an amazing moment to have that validation, to be like, you know, Miriam, like, we really saw that. Because someone had... someone in the company would be like, no, she's not doing all this stuff. It's really, you know, other people. It's not her. They really, like, pushed me down in my achievements and what I'd been doing.
Wow.
And really able to recognize, oh, because I actually had to leave the company for them to see what I'd been doing. Wow. Which is, like, a combination of, like, different, you know, I was very young and, like, I wasn't being taken seriously so much, but even though I was working so hard. So that validation was amazing. And also, I believe, some of that came from me going online and sharing and starting to have a social presence. Like I was interviewed by Instagram for their design launch, which was like amazing. It just did like leaps and bounds for me. I couldn't even believe. I thought it was spam email. I was like, no, who's Katie from Instagram?
That's always funny.
And then I went on LinkedIn. I was like, oh my gosh, she's legit.
That's hilarious.
That was really cool. And it was just an amazing, but you know, when I went back much stronger and I went back more level-headed and not so arrogant. And I, you know, learned my lessons and I learned that people and relationships with people is so important. And it's so important, even if you think you're like a rock star, talented, amazing designer, just keep your head level, you know, keep giving to people, stay humble, stay hungry. Don't let it get to you, because I know as designers we can be, we get a lot of compliments like, "Oh, it's amazing!" Just, just stay grounded and keep giving and keep loving. And even, you know, Chris, you wrote this amazing Instagram post recently. Like, you know, you're going to give and people are going to hate you for it, and be successful and people will hate you for it. And I really feel that in life, you know, just keep going. You keep doing you, and you know, I don't want to say don't care what other people think, because it is that double-sided coin of that you can't care what people think, but you have to, because they also, these are the people that are going to hire you, you're going to work with them.
Yeah.
But it's so important to really, even as a designer, bring relationships to the forefront of your work and, you know, stay good, stay kind, be nice, and you know, stay grounded.
You bring a really good point. For me, what I have written down, it's definitely being able to step back, making relationships the forefront of what it is that you do, being able to stay grounded and keep doing what you're doing. And how, I loved how you brought the Chris Doe quotations up in there, because it's, you know, being the skill to step back is very key. You know, there's probably times where we are grinding ourselves because we're, you know, we're trying to learn or what have you, family, life hitting you in the back. It's very important to not only have the grind skill sets, but to also know that life is a long game and you have to have both the hustle and grind, but also the ability and habits to rest so that you can continue to get back into the hustle and grind. And also while you're hustling, grinding, having that humble hat to make sure that you're not just being like, I'm the badass, right? And I really like, you know, it. Everything that you mentioned is very important and is very hard. Those are the hard things to do. Because as we all hear Gary Vee, you know, the hustle and bustle is great and all, but the other side of things, the perspective, not just being I'm the shit and just... do what you do and, you know, bring people up with you and just keep doing what you love. All right, Miriam. So with that, let us know let everybody know where we can find you. And any last words?
Just want to say thank you, Brandon, so much for having me.
It's of been course.
An experience. And also, you've helped me so much. I want to thank you for helping me so much in my Instagram growth, and I've, you know, been listening to your videos on how to grow your Instagram, and I've been doing that.
It's really very nice.
It's really been amazing. Like, you know, you're very much like, you've got to like reach out to people and be more active in the community, and I've been really like taking that on, and it's been an amazing experience because I've met so many incredible people on Instagram, and I'm inspired, you know, every day, and yeah, just love it. It's great. Thank you.
Yeah, guys, I really hope you guys enjoyed this nice episode. We talked a lot about it, the internal side of things, and I really dig Miriam and her experience. So with that said, guys, do not forget to leave your comments in, or really voice comments, if you guys are listening to on Anchor. But other than that, guys, thank you so much for watching, or not watching. I think I'm in IGTV right now. Thank you so much, Miriam, for your time, and we're super excited to... Wait, hold on. Where are we going to find you on Instagram and LinkedIn? That's what we were asking for, and you just skirted right over it.
Sorry, at Isaac85 and Miriam Isaac on LinkedIn, right there.
All right, Miriam. So with that said, guys, don't forget to check out Miriam on Instagram, LinkedIn, and her website, and also reviews. All right, guys.
See you guys on the next one.
Yeah, review the episode. Review design huddle.
All right, guys. See you on the next one. Peace. Bye.
Design Huddle is a podcast that is hosted by Ryan Warner and Brendan Gross. The opinions stated here are our own and not those of our company. Thank you for tuning in, and please feel free to share this episode.